Yes, another massive name. Only went and got Owen Coyle. How are you doing, mate? All right?
I'm looking forward to it, yeah.
The Gorbals' favourite son, I've got written down here. That's right, isn't it?
It's, well, that's very true, from the Gorbals. I've got to say, the one thing about the Gorbals is it always brings you down to earth. Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember coming back up a couple of months ago, and I'm one of nine, five brothers and three sisters, and my older brothers were obviously professionals and very, very good players. But anyway, we'd been at a function, and we're at the function. It was all people for the Gorbals. Great night. And so the chat started chatting about football, as you do. And one of the boys that went to school with me, my pal of mine was there, and they said to this company, it was older guys and everything, and they said, oh, this is Oney, he was the best player that came out of the Gorbals. And which I think, all right, that's nice to say, and that, you know, very complimentary. And this older guy says, well, I have to disagree with that. And so the kind of everybody kind of went, and I'm kind of laughing because I don't take myself too seriously. I says, all right, no problem. He says, no, to be honest, I love what you've done. He says, at the end of the day, for the career you had, for the size, I mean, I played at 10 stone, I was pencil thin and made the best of what I had, really. He said, so it was sensational what you've done, Owen. He says, but I've got to say, you weren't even the best player in your own house.
he says,
your older brother Joe, and he was. I mean, Joe was sensational. Uh-huh. And that's what happens. Sometimes people get a little break at the right time, whatever. But the one thing talking about the Gorbals, it does, it brings you down there. So it was brilliant, really.
I'll tell you one thing you didn't get in the Gorbals.
Go on.
Shoes like that, they are belters. I love them.
Well, that's the ones we used to wear at school because they're that shiny when you put them there. Anyway, that's a different. That's for another day.
And the kind of show what I wanted to make you feel at home, mate. I know how much you love it.
Oh, there you go.
You can spark it if you want. It's
well,
up to you.
Do you know what? When I played at. When I played at Bolton, there's a factory at Arrowton just next to myself, John McGinley, Andy Walker, Stevie Fulton, with a host of Scottish lads. And the chief executive of the factory came in and said, listen, would you mind coming and just going around the factory? Because obviously with that connection with bars, Iron Brew and everything else. So myself, McGinley, Andy Walker, we all went along, met all everybody that worked in the factory. It was brilliant, really nice. And what they did say then is, any time you want any product, just bring your car, open the boot, and they used to shove cases and cases of the old Scotland's National drink in. So, can't go wrong.
Brilliant.
And being teetotal, it's always served me well. And
I'll need to go down with you and get the
well, I used to mention it because obviously when we played at the time, and obviously in the Premier League, as it was the Barclays Premier League at the time, and they used to say after the game, or as most managers do, a glass of red wine, glass of wine, bump, bump, when you've won. And I said, well, I don't drink. I said, but obviously I'll have an Iron Brew tonight. So they get certainly publicity from it, but, that's for sure.
Did you ever get any of the players of that on the Iron Brew? Any of the boys down south? Any big players that would...
I think they always are. They would have took a wee taste here and there. I think they find it quite sweet, isn't it? So they prefer their, is it dandelion and burdock, which not for me. But anyway, so we'll leave that to the English boys.
Last thing, you mentioned it there, the Barclays Premier League. I always wanted to ask you, why did you always say that? Because you were named Barclays Salesman of the Year 2002.
Yeah, well, what we had was, if you know, people sometimes are aware of this, sometimes not. So with the LMA, the League Managers Association, who do fantastic work for all the managers and coaches and what have you, they obviously, their deal's tied in with Barclays in terms of Barclays sponsor and some funding is into that. So obviously they used to say to us from the LMA, listen, if you get a chance to mention Barclays, make sure you do it. So it just became natural then that, you know, it's the Barclays Premier League, and myself, I think Mancini at the time, I think he was close behind me in saying it, and he was obviously Italian. So there was a number of us at the time, Sir Alex, I think he gave it the odd mention as well. Yeah. So I think we all did our bit. No, we didn't make anything personally, but the LMA, they obviously kept them in the limelight with Barclays, thinking, well, they're really promoting it through their managers. Mm-hmm. So it helped the LMA, and that's what it's about. It's helping everybody else.
Oh, man. Right, on to the managerial career we're going to speak about today. When was it as a player that you thought, this is what I want to do, I want to be a manager?
Well, I think, first and foremost, you've got to say that the playing days, they're the best days of your life. If you could just keep playing and playing.
No, when you play,
everybody. Well, listen, I've seen it a few times, and I think you're honest in your assessment. No, far from it. You've always got that ability. But I think I wanted to play as long as I could. But I did we were quite fortunate because when we were doing the B licence, they did a innovative course, if you want to call it, that they actually could do the B licence on your day off, a Wednesday. So we used to come every Wednesday to Lesser Hampden, myself, Sandy Stewart, Bobby Williamson at the time, there was a number of us. And so we were able to actually achieve our B licence during the course of the season.
Right.
So, and I think it was only about 22, 23 at the time, Jimmy Boyle, was a number of us. And then that then led you into to the A licence. The reason that was because when I played, I was quite vocal. And so you felt you were kind of naturally coaching anyway while you were still playing. So when the legs give up, then the next transition of that obviously is to that development into coaching. Because before you're a manager, you're a coach in terms of understanding the game and trying to implement your ideas and help different people. And but I wanted to keep playing. I mean, I'd been offered a couple of jobs while I was still playing. But I was fortunate that I joined the... Ian McCall at Airdrie Onions again, because I'd been at Airdrie a few times, and I came in as his player coach. So I was able to learn that side of the game while I was still coaching. And not to go away on a tangent, but he gave me one of the best compliments I'll ever get, Ian McCall. I'd been at Dunfermline, and Livingston were obviously speaking to me at the same time as well. I was about to leave Dunfermline, and Ian McCall wanted to sign me at Airdrie. So he phoned me, he says, "Coyley, you need to come and help us, and you know, we'll get a game at Alloa." This was on, whatever it was, on the Monday. I said, "Well, listen, I'm actually speaking to Livingston. David Hay and Jim Leishman were there." I said, "So there's a chance I might be going to Livingston, but if not, then I'll come and I'll speak to you." So anyway, the Livingston deal was dependent on David Fernandes, who eventually played at Glasgow Celtic.
Yeah, good player.
Wonderful player. So Livingston were looking to get a striker in, and they had a chance of getting him in. And if they did, then that's who they're going for. But if it fell through, then obviously they'd said to me. So they were very honest up front, and with Davey and Davey Hay and Jim Leishman, which I thank them for. Anyway, they actually got David Fernandes. But Ian McCall played his game against Alloa, and he phoned me the following day, and they beat 6-0. And he phoned me the following day. He says, "Coyle, you need to come in, you need to help us." He says, "I had you last night. Would they beat 6-3? So I thought, well, I knew you were still conceding the 6, but he thought I'd just go 3 in the game. So actually, that's when I signed for him, became player coach, and did really well and enjoyed it with him. He then went to Falkirk as his player coach. And then when he left to go to Dundee United, he wanted me to go with him then and there at that time. But I was really enjoying what we were doing at Falkirk with some terrific young kids, and Lee Miller and Mark Kerr, yeah, Colin Samuel, with some good players, good experience. You know, obviously myself, were player coaches, John Henry's, Big Kevin James, Alan Fair. I mean, with some, and we were a point clear at the top of the league at the time. So I said to him, "No, listen," I said, he said, "Well, come in the summer." He said, "Shake my hand, give me your word. I know if you give me, you shake your hand, then you're good." So I said, I'd agreed with him that I would come in the summer. So me and Yogi went in as player coaches. We brought Brian Rice in because we were still playing in the pitch, and we only won the league by 9 points. I mean, it was, I ended up the top scorer in the league that year when the first division played. I was about 37, 38 at the time, really fortunate, 37 I think. So, but that's kind of how I found my way into to coaching. And then obviously, when the legs do give up as they did, then I get offered the opportunity to be the St Johnstone manager.
See, on the player manager thing, because you rarely see it now, is it as difficult as it looks?
I would suggest it would be very difficult for an individual. You've got to remember there was me and Jogie, there was two of us, but what we did, we knew that we needed somebody on the side of the pitch, because really when you're on the pitch, you've got to be a player. You can't be telling this guy, that guy, what you're doing, you've still got to. So I think first and foremost, you've got to be the player on the pitch. When you can get one or two instructions, fine. But I think for anybody, I'm not saying it's not achievable, it probably is, but it's a really difficult task to combine both at a very high level. That being said, it worked really well for us, because we had Brian Rice there to help us, and went on to, as I say, win the league and take it from there.
See, just on Big Yogi, John Hughes, how much of a character is he?
Well, he has this persona, and he is a character, but out with that, he's a very, very football-orientated, very forward football-thinking man. Mm-hmm. And I think he's been done a disservice, I've got to say, in the last couple of years. Somebody I've got a lot of time for. I mean, he calls it the way it is, but he knows the game. You've seen that with the success. He's won the Scottish Cup at Inverness. He's got Falkirk promoted in his own right. Plays a really attacking, and I think, style of football people would want to see. Absolutely. So I've got a lot of time for the big game. We still keep in touch, obviously, but yeah, he's somebody I've got an awful lot of time for.
Was it good cop, bad cop with you and him?
It was actually worked really well, because people have this persona, this character of him that, you know, he's just a bit brash and about everything else. And obviously, you know from speaking to me as well, I'm quite intellectual and quite clever. So so I think it's fair to say it worked really well.
You won player of the year that year.
I did.
Could the boys still give you a stick when you were a manager?
Yeah, listen, you're saying that as if it was a thing. It was probably, you won player of the year after, maybe won the year before and the year before that. Anyway, it is. The playing days, listen, they were brilliant days. But absolutely, the boys were, I mean, they were good lads. I mean, Millers and Kerrs, and they were clever, they were witty. Mm-hmm. So, the team spirit, that camaraderie, whatever you want to call it, that was there in abundance. And, we all mucked down, we all did a bit. And it was, I've got to say, it was the last season at Brockville as well. So it was really special. Mm-hmm. And Falkirk, a really good club. And, I really enjoyed that spell.
So why did you leave Falkirk? Because you said you had a good squad there.
Yeah, I did. And we were offered the job, both myself and Yogi, went in with discussions with him. But because I'd given Ian my word that I was going to go to Dundee United, I was never ever going to go back on my word. So as it happened, I still felt it was important that I tried to get a good deal for Yogi, or you know what we were doing. So we did that, and then and eventually Campbell Christie's not here now, the chairman, God rest him. We just had a really good open chat, and I said, listen, I've given my word, it's going to be difficult to go back in that. And that's what happened. Yogi obviously took it in his own right. I went to Dundee United as player coach because I still wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And they were in the Premier League, and thought we were denied going to the Premier League because we didn't, last season at Brockville, they said that we couldn't share at Airdrie because the rules at that time, Airdrie would have priority over fixtures. Anyway, so Falkirk never got up there on the technicality and not having the stadium ready. And they and I still wanted to be at the highest level, and Dundee United afforded me that opportunity.
So St Johnstone was your first manager's job on your own, but I just want to ask, while you were playing, who was the managers that really had an influence on you, that really stuck it?
I mean, I've been really lucky in my career. I think I played under about 21, 22 managers at different clubs.
How many did you get to sack?
Jack Charlton and Ashland. Not too many, I'll tell you why. Because see, when you score 297 goals in your career, that means you've scored a lot of goals for managers.
Brilliant.
Certainly not as many as you, that's for sure. But the one thing about that, every manager I worked for, because they had different skills and different attributes, but, and maybe it's a different era, but you were very respectful of what they did. You never always seen eye to eye with them. I mean, I remember at Dunfermline, never seen eye to eye with Jimmy Calderwood, in respect of, I was always on the bench, I thought he should be playing, but I was very respectful of what he'd done and everything else, and somebody I liked and somebody I've got a lot of time for. So I think that was always important to me, but that's really how you're brought up, what your core values, what your principles are. So as much as a lot of them were very influential in my thinking, Bruce Rioch was my manager at Bolton, never seen eye to eye with Bruce Rioch, but I remember when he went to Arsenal as a manager, And a press guy phoned me up from down south and said, "Oh, we know you don't want to see eye to eye. If you get anything, you know, negative," they wanted me to say something, mm-hmm. you know, negative about him. Nah, I would never ever do that. And I actually went in and I was very complimentary. But I remember Bruce ringing me up and saying, "Listen, Coyle," he says, "I know it would have been easy for you to, you know, say what you wanted to say." He says, "But I can't thank you enough. You were a consummate professional, as much as we clashed." Because Bruce was very, very much strict, disciplinary. Nothing else, nothing wrong with that, absolutely. And I was quite loud and had a bit of banter and everything else. And if I had a player like that, I would embrace that player because I think he knew I would do anything for the team because first and foremost, I was a team player. But it was kind of, if you want to say, a clash of personalities, whatever you want to call it. But again, I had so much respect because his knowledge of football and everything was second to none.
So St Johnstone job, your first, how did that come about?
Well, I went to Dundee United as player coach and I was on the bench quite a lot in the Premier League, and as I say, I wanted to play. So I said to Colleen McCall, "Listen, I need to play." And he says, "Right, we'll still take the reserves, but we'll let you go on loan." So I went on loan to actually Sandy Stewart, who eventually became my assistant manager. I went to loan him to Airdrie, Kenny Blackie was his assistant. So I came in, still taking the reserves at Dundee United and playing on a Saturday. And I think when we joined, we were 15 points behind Morton. And anyway, cut long story short, we actually went on to win the league by 8 points. I managed to score whatever it was, 12 goals in 15 games. But I had Alan Gow and young Willie McLaren, Jerome Varay, Sandy, good players. So anyway, we turned it and we won the league. And then into the following year, Blackie then was offered to go to Leicester with Craig Levein. Craig was going to Leicester and asked Blackie to join him. So then Sandy was kind of left on his own. So Sandy said, "Could you not come in as player assistant manager?" Which meant I had to obviously leave Dundee United. So I spoke to Colley, who was in the best place because we were doing a really good job with the reserves, but he understood. So I joined Sandy as player assistant manager and we got promoted. We were doing really well in the First Division and everything else. And then three games before the end of the season, St Johnstone changed the manager. Jeff Brown rang me and he said, "Owen, would you be interested in St Johnstone job?" I said, "Well, I've not applied for your job." And he says, "No, I know, but you come highly recommended. Your brother played for me. I know your family. I know how you go about things, and I'd love to speak to you in a job." I said, "Well, yeah, I'd love to chat with you about it." Sandy was actually in the car with me at the time when I got the phone call. We're coming back for a reserve game against St Mirren. And he said, "Right, I'll drive down to Glasgow to meet you." And I said, "Well, actually, you don't have to. It was Easter holidays, I think." I says, I'm up in Dunkeld in my lodge. And when I say lodge, for everybody to be clear on this, that's a holiday lodge. So that's the only lodge I've been in. But anyway, so we had a holiday lodge at Dunkeld, Burnham. So anyway, he says, "Right, I'll be out to see you." So anyway, I gets in and I said to Kerry, I said, and the missus, it was terrible, torrential rain. I said, "You're going to have to take the kids out. Jeff Brown's coming from Perth to see me about the St Johnstone job." So Kerry's face was like thunder because it was torrential rain. "So I'm going to have to take the kids out in the rain." I said, "Well, if you don't mind." So anyway, got the kids wrapped up, get the max on and everything else. And she took them out, Jeff Brown's car's pulled in. So he comes in, and this is 100% bona fide true story what happened. So as you come in, you open up, there's a kitchen area, and you want to make a good impression, as you always do. I says, "Oh, my Mr. Chairman, do you like a tea or a coffee?" He says, "Oh, I'd love a coffee." So that throws me straight away, because all I do is drink tea, and we drink tea. So I'm like, okay, take a seat. So I've put him through, and there was a breakfast band in a space in the unit. So I'm popping my head through, yes, Mr. Chairman, no, Mr. Chairman. At the same time, wait for this tea and coffee. So eventually find a coffee. So two, both sugar and milk. And my, you know, Mark's with a couple of boys been in my house. My mugs are that size. It's no normal mugs because I like my tea. So anyway, we sat down over an hour chatting away about football. Couldn't have went any better. So it finished and he says, listen, Owen, I've really enjoyed myself. He says, really good chat. I'll be in touch with you. I says, brilliant, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So he leaves. So I check my mobile phone, which is on silent, obviously. So there's 12 missed calls for Kerry, obviously wanting back in with the rain and everything. So I phoned, I said, oh, you can come back in. She said, thank God, I've been round the corner. So she comes in literally 2 minutes later. And it's that wet that the rain's still running down her nose. They're absolutely soaked through, Kerry and the kids. She went, I hope that went really well. I says, Kerry, it couldn't have been any better. I says, the only thing was, he threw me at the start. She says, how? He says, ask for a coffee. Could I find a coffee? Eventually found it and made it. And she looked, she says, we haven't got coffee. I says, yeah, we have. She says, that's Bistro Gravy, you clown. So as God and the judge, I made him a mug with milk and sugar and Bistro Gravy, interviewing for the St. John's
job. And he still
job.
Gave you the job?
Well, I had to phone him up. I phoned straight away and said, Mr. Chairman, I've got an apology, mate. Bear in mind, Jeff's a farmer anyway. And not that that's many excuses. And he said, what is it, son? I said, I'm really sorry, that was Bistro Gravy, I made you. He says, well, I thought that was a funny tag off. He says, anyway, well, I've got you, I want you off your job. So brilliant. There was a meth in my madness. And it was brilliant.
See, when you
fantastic.
Get your first manager's job, is there nerves there?
But absolutely. I mean, there's nerves in all. If you don't have nerves in football, you shouldn't be in the game, both as a player, a coach, a manager. Of course there is. But when, and this is the thing, and it's a really good question.
Thanks, mate, cheers.
As a player, well, I've seen some of your other stuff, so it's a lot better than I've seen before. As a player, you're responsible for yourself. And you know, if you play well, the manager picks you. But as a manager, you're responsible not only for the team, but sometimes a town, a huge city. So it's not something we take lightly. So, of course, straight away, the adrenaline, of course, the manager in your own right. But equally, you want to do well and you want to, you know, things to start and move on. And so straight away, everything's running through. You want to implement your ideas and get everything going. But it was brilliant. Yeah, I've got to say, it was an exciting time.
But see, even like just getting the players together for the first day, and do you think about what you're going to say weeks before, or is it just off the cuff?
Well, I've always been. I think you know the points you want to get across. But even when I'm going doing, you know, after dinner or whatever it is, I'm never one for writing stuff down. I'm quite, you know, I like to think coming for the Gorbals and chatting away, a family, a big family, it comes naturally chatting anyway.
I've noticed those social
skills as you do, but. I think it's important that you want to get your points across, absolutely. So I think it's making sure that you cover them, and obviously the players know exactly, as far as I'm concerned, where they stand and what's involved and how you want to really move on. Because every manager, every coach will have different ideas, and that doesn't mean that somebody's right or wrong. It just means people have different ways of doing things, different ways of playing. I mean, there's loads of ways to win a game. People look at, and we're going away on a tangent, forgive me, but people look at Man City and Pep Guardiola and, you know, the perfect football they play. But there's more than that way to win a game, because people might not have the tools at their disposal that Pep Guardiola has, so you have to play in a different way.
You finished second that season behind St Mirren. How would you assess your first season?
It was brilliant. We were terrific, because what we didn't say was that St Johnstone team had nearly been relegated from the first division the year before, so they could easily have been out of the league.
So what did you change?
We changed players, we changed the personnel, we got players in that we felt could help us to achieve the aim of trying to get promotion to the Premier League. Well, St Johnstone had been for a number of years, but then they dropped down and been in the first division for a couple of years more than they wanted to be. So we had to try and change that. And equally within that, then you try to change the mindset. You're trying to get players in that are winners and achieve that. And we brought, you know, I get boys that I worked with before who I knew, tried and trusted. Big Kevin James came in, Fergie came in. I got Jason Scotland in from Dundee United, who
good player,
sensational player. And obviously Dundee United had a problem with his work permit issue. But when I went to the appeal hearing, which I did, I managed to convince them, the six on the board, that he would offer an awful lot to the First Division, which he did. So in answer to your question, we got some good players in, but still within the budget that we had. So we had to use our contacts and everything else that you do. And that's the same. Football's the same game. It's obviously just different levels, but in essence, it's still the same.
How important is it? Is it a lot down to the players that you've got here?
Yeah, I think managers ultimately will be judged on the players. You can implement your ideas, and you know this as well. But if you've got a group of players that know their job and they're good pros and they look after themselves and they bring it onto the field and they've got that spirit, and you know, it's not just one or two things, there's a load of things that have always come together. Yeah. I always think when everybody is aligned at a football club, in terms of the owner, the chairman, the manager, that relationship, really important, the players, obviously the coaching staff, the supporters, when everybody's singing for that same hymn sheet, you have a real chance of achieving success. And success doesn't mean that you're always going to be the champions. Every different team will have different levels of success. Mm-hmm. For example, Cardiff this year in the Premier League, if they stay in the Premier League, that's huge success for Neil Warnock. So there's always different levels of success. But obviously, good players help you to achieve that.
Yeah. Second season, Gretna had all the money. Did you always know it was going to be tough to get promoted?
Yeah, I think we knew it was going to be tough because obviously, as you mentioned, all the money that Gretna had. But equally, we knew we had good players. We knew we had a good team. And we were actually... That second season, we went to both semi-finals of the Cup as well. We played a huge amount of games. But we did that because we'd quality. We beat so many Premier League teams on the way. And the semi-final of the League Cup, we lost out after extra time to Hibernian at Tynecastle in a game that we probably felt we should win. And then the Scottish Cup semi-final here against Glasgow Celtic, we lost 2-1. I think they went in front with a penalty, Van Hesselink, and then Big Martin Hard equalised. And then we lost to Van Hesselink again. I think we were near post-header. But last 15, 20 minutes... We absolutely, bombarded them. Mm-hmm. I think Gordon was the manager at the time. And I remember coming after the game saying, listen, for a first division team, that's incredible. But we had good players. But after that game, that was the turn of the year, and we were still, I think we were 15 points behind Gretna in January. And we started game by game to pull them in because, as you say, we had good players. We were finished with the Cups. We could focus in the league. And we went on that winning run, culminating. I think everybody knows what happened in the last day of the season.
Mm-hmm. Just on Scotland, could you tell he'd going to have the career that he did?
Say that again?
Jason Scotland, could you tell that he was going to play?
Jason, I worked with him at Dundee United, uh-huh. So I could see that the quality he had. Jason, obviously coming from Trinidad and Tobago, had this, he's kind of laid back, Jason, uh-huh. and you felt sometimes you just, wanted, I always remember Sandy, my assistant manager, used to say to Jason, right, Jason, as we do in Scotland, we need you for the first minute, you need, and he used to turn around and say, Sandy, I'll give you 10 minutes of magic. And he thought that 10 minutes, don't get me wrong, at our level at that time, that 10 minutes of magic often was enough, mm-hmm. but you just wanted so much more from him. Because when I looked and I'd be Pizzo, Peter McDonald played alongside him, and Pizzo was a sensational striker. Peter McDonald not picked up the injuries he had, he'd been a top striker in Scotland all his days.
I'm telling you,
I love working with him, he was a gem of a boy, and him and Jason together, when Pizzo was fully fit, he was incredible. And those injuries kind of curtailed his career in many ways, because he'd have been a top striker in Scotland, no doubt about it.
Another one I want to ask about is Dale McInnes was in the team.
Yeah.
Did you see managerial qualities in him?
Absolutely. I mean, when I worked with Derek at Dundee United, Derek came back as captain from West Brom, uh-huh. and he came into Dundee United, and I worked with him there, got to know him really well as a guy as well, and where we had that holiday lodge, Dale had won always in the same estate, and I tried to get him 6 months before I did, but he went to Millwall, and so he was playing away at Millwall, and it wasn't quite working out, so I kept in touch with him all the way. I said, well, listen, why don't we try and do this for January? So we did it. I've got to come in. He came in, and he dropped a lot of money to come and play, but I'd said to him, you'd come as player coach and you would take the under-18s with Tommy Campbell and he'd help with the reserves, which he did. And you could always see Dale had a great football brain, he understood the game and everything else, and that was it. It was always going to be a natural progression, similar to what happened with myself, I think, and you could see it in them. So, there was absolutely no doubt. And then when we, obviously, you'll come to it, but for me it was just a natural progression when we left, that Dale could obviously be ready to step up for the St Johnstone job.
Mm-hmm. Just on that last day, how low was that feeling? Because it looked like Gretna had blown it, obviously.
Yeah, going back to that, I mean, we had to go to Hamilton on the last day, and Hamilton were unbeaten on the AstroTurf all year. Hamilton was third, fourth in the league. They'd been a good side. And we had to hope that Gretna didn't win. If they drew and we won, we'd win the league, coming from 15 points behind. But then the Gretna game up at Ross County's Arms was delayed by 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. So they kicked off 6 minutes behind us. So we started like a house on fire at Hamilton, and it eventually won the game. But having won the game, I then had to take the players into the dressing room and sit for the last 5 minutes, nice, coming into the game. And Stavo, I had Stephen Milne as well, who had, was a terrific striker. He was injured that day and he wasn't playing, but he had the radio in the corner. So we're sitting like in a dressing room like this, and it's 0-0. And Ross County had to win that day to stay up as well, otherwise they were getting relegated. So Ross County got a corner in the 94th minute or whatever it was, and they pushed everybody into the box to try and score the goal. And Gretna defended it, kind of cleared it, and then Stavo says, Gretna's got a 3-1 gaffer. So he's relaying this to me through the radio, and the boys are looking at me. And then they broke away, and I think it was wee James Grady who managed to toe poke it in off the post, and Gretna scored in the 96th minute. So football's full of highs and lows, and the one thing you've got to be in football is mentally strong. So it was as horrible as it was, I'm the manager, and I just had to say to the boys that we thank them for their efforts, what they did that year, and make sure when we come back we use that heart to motivate ourselves to push ourselves forward for next season again. But yeah, it wasn't a nice feeling, that's for sure. It was hard to take.
But a good season, because big results against Rangers as well that year. As you say, you ran certainly close. What is it you do with players, maybe a division down, to give them the belief that they can go and compete against those teams?
Well, I think part of it's what you've mentioned there, that having that belief, because players at all levels, they're good players. They're playing at those levels for a reason. The reason players play at the very highest level, which I've been fortunate to be involved in, is because those players have the same technical ability, and maybe sometimes a little bit more, sometimes not. But what they have is pace and power, and they're able to bring that every week. So the guys that play in the second division Scotland, when they're at their very best on that day, they can actually get to that level. The issue will be they can't do it 36 games in a row. Whereas the boys at the top level are able to, not saying every week, but more often than not, they're bang there at those levels. And even if you look through it, you'll see boys in the Championship in Scotland, as in England at the moment, who have far better technical ability than some boys that play in the Premier League. But the difference will be they won't have the pace and power. And ultimately, that's what happens at the highest level. The game gets played quicker and quicker and quicker. And you need to have those qualities, along with the technical ability, to get to that level.
So is motivation a big thing?
I think motivation's a thing. I think also as well as making sure that everybody's at their very best. And really, I always felt this as a player as well. It was the opportunity to stand toe-to-toe with a really good player and say, well, do you know what, I can play a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went to Rangers in the quarter-final. We beat them 2-0. Stevie Milne-Savile scored both goals. And we won that game in merit. I think that was actually one of, I think that might have been Paul Le Guin's last game in charge of Rangers. We won in merit. We were terrific on the night, and it was a really good St Johnstone team.
So when you're putting in these good performances, is that when you started to get wee whispers that interest way down south?
It's all relative, isn't it? Because when you're perceived to be doing well, and again, you're only as good as your players there. But when you are, and those players are producing, and you're implementing your ideas, then of course. People start to say, oh, such and such is doing well and different things, a little bit of press coverage, whatever you want to call it. And obviously I, having played in England as I did for Bolton for 2-3 years, then of course people are aware of you down there as well, which always helps.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you this, what's harder to manage, a first division Scottish dressing room or the top players?
I mean, it's a good question.
Thanks very much. I'm because again,
no, the reason being because it takes all different things, because obviously, you know, at the very highest level, the top player, they're top players for a reason, you know, because they have everything. Sometimes when you have players that feel they should be top players, I think sometimes that you might get more problems with that. And I'll be the first, I'll stroke anybody's ego as long as they're delivering for you in the pitch. The problem you'll always get, if somebody's ego is bigger than their ability, then you've got a problem. And again, that just comes down to managing it and looking to try and get the best from them.
Is there more carry on in a Scottish First Division dressing room?
No, I think there's banter wherever you go. I mean, we had a terrific squad. I mean, the squad we had at Burnley, mm-hmm. who were, when we went in, I mean, the bottom half of the Championship, and the year we got promoted, I mean, I think, and we might come on to this obviously if we're going to talk, but we were, I think, in terms of budget, in the bottom three in terms of the budget for the league. But what we had was some good players with an unbelievable spirit. And, you know, I think footballers like humour, which is very important, because it can be the pressure of wanting to be in the team every week and competing against somebody else as well. But I think, I think there's a lot of humour in the game. And of course, I was really lucky in Scotland, the dressing rooms I was in, that there was always really good lads there, and really enjoyed their company and that bit of banter. I think that what's important is to understand when it's important to have a good laugh, a bit of banter, mm-hmm. and when it's important to go and work hard and make sure then that you're tuned in and you're ready to do your job.
Uh-huh. So when did you first hear of Burnley's interest?
When they changed their manager, Steve Cottrell had been there, who'd actually did well at Burnley, and then it kind of tailed off from a little bit. And so I'd get a call then saying that, you know, Burnley were looking to speak to me amongst, you know, three or four others. And I had a really good chat with Brendan Flood, Brendan came in and putting a lot of money into the club to keep Burnley afloat, keep them going, like director's loans, and had a really good chat with them. Then obviously met the chairman, so spoke with Brendan for about an hour and a half on the phone, met the chairman.
Cup of gravy.
I think I told him that so he knew not to ask. I actually met him at Gleneagles Hotel. I met him, he was up that. It was actually international weekend. It was actually Scotland were, so it had been 2007, Scotland were just going to play Italy on the Saturday afternoon out here.
Right.
Alec McLeish was the man who was in charge, and if Scotland won, they'd qualified. Obviously, Italy were terrific in the day, I think, and won the game. But so I'd met him at Gleneagles in the morning and came back, and then that went well. So they were then wanted a meeting with both Brendan and the chairman the following week, which I met them. But I've got to say as well, because sometimes, you know, we all need a helping hand in football, and Alec McLeish had been my manager at Motherwell, and somebody I've got so much time for and love playing for him and his man management and everything else. And on the eve of that game, the Saturday morning, Alec's actually Scotland manager getting ready for that game, and he actually had the good grace to phone Brendan Flood, and he said, listen, I've known I've worked with him, what he's about. So he didn't have to do that. So
brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've done it before myself. I've done it. I mean, I phoned the Bristol City chairman for when Dale was managing Johnston to recommend them for the Bristol City job, as you do, because when you know there's good people, then of course you want to help them when you can.
Great. Only in football you would get that. Eh? You left a week before the Challenge Cup. Were you wanting to stay that week longer?
Yeah, I left 3 days. Days before the Challenge Cup final. Yeah, I wanted to see that. I wanted to see the game through. We'd prepared for it. We'd obviously a starting 11 in mind and everything else. And but they wanted me down on the Thursday because they had a home game against Stoke on the Saturday. Burnley, it was their 125th anniversary as well. So they wanted it in. So I spoke with the chairman Jeff and Stuart Duff, the chief executive at the time, and I said, well, listen, I'll go. Obviously Sandy's going to come with me, but Sandy will stay for the game and take the game, and Dale will help him. Although Dale was still playing. I says, and then, so you're in good hands, the team's picked and everything else, ready to go. And so I left on the Thursday. The boys, obviously, Sandy took training Friday, Saturday, and played the game on the Sunday.
Is it emotional leaving St Johnstone?
Very much so. I mean, I was back on the Sunday for the final. So I played against Stoke on the Saturday.
Oh, you went back, didn't you?
Yeah, we did down to Burnley, did a press conference, got the boys ready for the Stoke game, and Stoke, they were going to get promoted that year. But anyway, we drew the game 0-0. And then I drove right back up and I went up to Dens Park for the final against St John's against Dunfermline. And they were 3-0 up at half time, the lads. They looked great. But then Dunfermline came back to 3-2 in the second half. And last 10 minutes, a bit nervous. So, of course, as much as at that time I'm the Burnley manager, I'm still kicking and heading every ball because I'm desperate for the boys to win. And they seen it through and it was brilliant. It's the first trophy St Johnstone won in many, many years. And I think it just gave everybody a lift and everything else.
We've had Sandy on the podcast. He still takes credit for it.
Well, to be fair to him, he won some record, the 100% record as a manager. One game, one win. So he likes to regale that story. But it was great. And obviously, Jeff had offered, obviously, said to Sandy about the job. But Sandy says, no, obviously, thank you, I appreciate it. But I'm going we obviously own. And I said to the chairman, listen, there's nothing broke here. It's about continuity, but adding to it. I said, Derek's ready. And Derek stepped in and did great.
And done great. See, when you first went to Burnley and you seen the squad that you had, the players that you had, did you think that promotion so soon was possible?
Well, when I went in November of that season, and obviously they were in the bottom half of the championship, so they were never going to get promoted that year. So what that year was about was stability, finding out, really who was going to be there with you for the long haul and who you had to change a little bit. And again, I mean, as a young manager, you're always tested. There's always trials and tribulations. And came in, but we hit the ground running. We actually drew 0-0 with Stoke. And then our next two games were Watford away and Charlton away, who were first and second in the league. So anyway, we beat them both. But what that does is that then gives you a bit of time, a feel-good factor, and then obviously everybody buying into what you want to do. But then in the January, our top scorer at the time was that boy Andy Gray.
Andy Gray,
really good striker.
Richard Keyes' partner.
Really, he was a really good striker as well. I could have done with him in his prime. So Andy Gray, really good striker, top goal scorer. But Charlton, he played well. And come the January, they wanted to buy him. And Alan Pardew was the manager, came on. And I says, listen, Alan, I says, Andy, it'll take $2 million to move Andy. And Andy hadn't scored in 10 games. He'd just still doing well for the team, but hadn't scored. And to be honest, if we were going to get $2 million, it was a good bit of business. Anyway, cut long story short, it kind of dragged on for a little bit. Eventually, they offered $1.5 million plus $500,000 of add-ons. I mean, when I'm doing deals, the add-ons have always got to be achievable. It's not on Charlton winning the Premier League, it's on how many games they'll play. Something you'll get if the player's fit and healthy. So that's what happened, Andy. So we lost Andy Gray in January. But what I did for the same salary, I went to Sunderland and I got Andy Cole on loan.
Wow.
So we had the money and we were only paying the same salary for Andy Cole on loan. And knowing that Andy Cole would, what he'd bring, he'd been a top player all his days. And Andy Cole was sensational for us. He never got about the pitch as much as he had before, but from 40 yards to the goal, he was sensational. He scored one of the best hat-tricks I've ever seen at Queen's Park Rangers.
Was he good for the young boys as well?
He was brilliant because he still passed the ball like a Champions League player. So straight away, your training's better. Mm-hmm. He zips the ball, his movement, and players are watching. I mean, a young Jay Rodriguez, and these boys are looking, thinking, that's how it's done at the very highest level. And he still had the same passion, enthusiasm, and it was sensational for us, it really was.
Just talking about Jay Rodriguez there, obviously you were still playing reserve games when you were at Burnley as a manager. Are you still kicking a ball now?
I still played all game of five a size. I'm obviously a couple of stones heavier now than when I played and when I was able to get about. But yeah, I mean, we could see, you can always see good players straight away. And Jay Rodriguez, I mean, he was only 17 and he just shone for the first second. We actually sent him up to Wee Murray, Alan Moore at Stirling Albion for 6 months to toughen him up physically, because, you know, the Scottish game at that level, you know you're in a game. And he loved it, and he was great for Murray and did really well. And then when he came back, I felt just to, because I was still relatively fit at that time, that I could still get about, that I could play half a dozen reserve games with him, which I did. And he wasn't happy because I outscored them in the six games. But what it allowed me to do was, when something happened on the pitch as a striker, to say to him there and then, instead of shouting from 50 yards away, listen, Jay, this is what you need to do differently. You want to keep aspiring to become better and better. And it worked really well. And then obviously I was able to step out and he just continued to flourish, develop. I mean, he's a quality player.
And Sky Sports videoed one of your games.
My goodness, well, they came, we'd actually into the Premier League, and the cameras turned up at this reserve game. And I said to the lad, I said, what are you doing here? He says, well, it's not often a Premier League manager plays in a reserve game. I said, no, I'm only playing just to help Jay. I said, it doesn't matter, we're here to cover it. So, of course, at that age, whatever, 43, whatever age I was, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, don't make a fool of yourself. So, anyway, the ball came in the first couple of minutes, went to control at halfway line, and it hit my knee, and obviously it went back about 50 yards. And I thought to myself, that's really sure. Look at this idiot still trying to run about. But as it happens, I was really lucky just before half time, get the ball in the box, managed to flick the ball over a couple of defenders, and it sat really nice to a reverse lob over the keeper's head right in the corner. So much so, I think it was the Sky goal of the week. So, from a personal point of view, it turned out well. But the most important point was just getting that message across to Jay. But equally, had I not got that, I know what they'd been showing. So that's what football does.
First season, you finished 13th. In the summer, you bring in some good players and you get to the playoffs the next season. Did you think that was possible in that summer?
Well, what we knew is we had to add some players for the way we wanted to play. I always like my teams to play at a high intensity and pass and move the ball, and people that are comfortable on the ball and play in a certain manner. So having had the money from Andy Gray that we didn't use, we knew we'd some money. But also as well, I had Kyle Lafferty, and there was obviously a lot of interest in Kyle. I mean, Glasgow Celtic, Peter Law had been on for a number of months about Kyle going to Celtic, and really keen on him. And I said, well, Fulham had been in the year before for just under £4 million. That's the price it's going to be to move him. And knowing that if I got that money, it would help the club with some finance, but equally it would give me some money to go and get my own type of players. And certainly players that how we wanted to play. And Kyle had done really well with Burnley and Northern Ireland, and so much so that, you know, he had a high value. So I liked Derek Riordan, who played at Celtic at the time. So Peter was always offering a deal with, you know, money plus Derek Riordan. And if we could get the right deal, I would have did it, because I really liked Derek Riordan from his time at Hibs and then to Celtic. As it happens, the value was still a little bit short. And I said to Peter, I said, you know, Peter had, I think at the time he valued Derek Riordan at half a sorry, 1.25. I valued him about £500,000. So there's £750,000 a difference there in the deal. And anyway, cut long story short, I said to Peter, it's going to have to be, for me, it's £3.5 million plus Derek Riordan, or £3.5 million plus add-ons, whatever it is. So he says, right, let me go back. So Peter's coming back and forth. But then in the meantime, Rangers rang. And they said, listen, what about Kyle Lafferty? I said, well, obviously, there's huge interest in Kyle. I said, it's going to take a deal of £4 million, certainly £3.5 million guaranteed, plus £500,000 of achievable add-ons, like when he plays 20, 40, 60 games, whatever it is. So he says, right, okay, leave it with me. So anyway, yep, as they do. So half an hour later, Rangers phoned back and they said, listen, £3.5 million plus £500,000 add-ons for Kyle Lafferty. I said, well, okay, I just obviously need to speak to my chairman. So I rang my chairman, but also out of courtesy, I'd rung Peter, because it was only fair, because they'd been there for 6 months. I says, Peter, it's £3.5 million plus the £500,000 add-ons, Rangers. And Peter says, well, okay, Owen, thanks, I appreciate it, you know, letting us know, as you do, because it's important. But my chairman says, yeah, that's fine, except Rangers' deal. So I rung Rangers straight away after that. I said, yeah, the club's happy for that deal to go ahead. And that's what happened. But that then allowed us, with Andy Gray money, with Kyle Lafferty money, to pay some money off that they need to be paid in terms of debts. But then I bought Chris Eagles from Manchester United. Sir Alex was brilliant with me in terms of the deal. I got Martin Patterson for £1 million from Scunthorpe, who'd scored 20-odd goals in a Scunthorpe team. So he came in, he scored 24 goals for us that season. He was sensational. I signed Big Kevin McDonald he'd been brilliant for me, for Dundee. Against me, it's Johnston for Dundee. He'd been sensational for just over 200,000. It was absolutely an absolute snip. I ended up getting Big Tomo in, a free transfer from Cardiff.
Stephen Thompson.
For nothing.
Was the Scottish market always something you looked at, or Scottish
players?
Yeah,
I think there's a certain type of Scottish player always does well in England. Mm-hmm. And Tomo had been doing well anyway. I knew Kevin would adjust and do really well to it. And I mean, Big Stevie Thompson, pound for pound, he's the best sign I've ever made. I got him for nothing. But he's no, big Tomo was.
Good about the dressing.
He was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I mean, we were only get promoted, you know, that season. We actually played 61 games that season. Wow. Because we had fantastic cup runs. But we went to Chelsea, knocked Chelsea. Chelsea had lost one game out of 93 at home, and we went to Chelsea, knocked them out of the cup. After penalties, Tomo was cup tied because he played at Cardiff the first couple of months. Right. And we were anyway, we're back to the hotel because we were staying overnight. But Tomo brought his guitar with him. And he actually went into the, he'd done a set for about four. I said to the boys, stay up, have a couple of drinks, we'll travel back tomorrow. A couple of drinks for me, I thought they were going to stay up for an hour. Tomo produced his guitar and he was staying there for about 4 hours. I think Sandy was in the middle of it as well. So so they absolutely loved it, but they damned it. They'd worked really hard for it. And I think that's important as well. When they've worked real hard, they get to enjoy what they've done. But that summed Stevie Thompson up, because a lot of players were not playing, sometimes they're a wee bit out of sorts. Here was somebody who wasn't even playing, but he was bringing the guitar and make part of the team and everything. He was Stevie Thompson, sensational. I have so much time for him.
See, just on the playoff final, how nerve wracking is that your whole season as a manager depending on one game? How what's the build up like to it?
Well, it's funny you say that, because ultimately what happened was, after we played Reading in the second leg of the semi-final, the players were out on their feet. That was their 60th game. And you could see they didn't have any more to give. The thing that we were really lucky was there was 2 weeks to the playoff final. So it allowed us time to prepare. So we gave them a couple of days to themselves, and then we went to Valdelobo in Portugal, where I'd been with Bolton as a player. When we won the playoff final at Wembley, when I'd scored, you know, he never asked me about that. But anyway, so and we'd got to the Premier League as players. But so I knew the complex there. They had a pitch like Wembley. So we went there and the sun was out, and then after the first day, into the second day, and the players, everything was back, the zip was back, so they were fresh, and that allowed us that time to build up. And it sounds bizarre because of the magnitude of the game, but I'd never felt so confident getting into a game to win, because we played Sheffield United twice that season. We'd beaten them. We'd beaten them at Sheffield, and we had to, Wade Elliott, who eventually scored the winner at Wembley that day, he played fullback that day because of the injuries we had. That season, we used the fewest amount of players in the Championship. A lot of people don't know this. We were actually embargoed in the January because we owed money. Right. So we couldn't sign any players. I just kept that to myself. And obviously, the Brendan Flood, the director, nobody else knew about it, because I didn't want it spilling into the players. And then I just needed them focused on the football. And but anyway, that going into the game, it sounds daft because Wembley, what's involved, 100 million game, whatever it was. But I felt really good about the players. They were in a good place. I could see it was back in the training. And of course, the game, there was a couple of nervous moments, as there always is. But we were worthy winners. We were the better team on the day, absolutely.
Best way to go up through the playoffs?
Well, if there's a magical way to get promoted, it's through the playoffs. I mean, but that's obviously fraught with danger, because from those four teams, only one can achieve it. But if there is a way to go up, that's the way. Wembley. I mean, Burnley's a town, I don't even know where this is, but Burnley, the population is 60,000. Right. There's obviously some surrounding areas that support the club as well. We had 38,000 at Wembley that day to support Burnley from a population of 60,000. It was incredible, and it was just great to see. It was a special day.
Last question on that, I want to ask, what's a team talk like before a playoff final?
Well, for me, the team talk, it was a simple one, because they'd earned the right to be there. So it was for them just to show a continuation of what they did. They'd already beaten them twice on merit. So for me, they knew they were better than them, and it was just making sure on that field that they come off. And I always say as well, don't have any regrets. See if it's a bad decision or a bounce of the ball or something like that. But if you come on, you'll know this as a player, when you play those games, and I've had some as a player myself, you come off and you think, I should have done better. That's a horrible feeling for anybody to have. So that was it. Just make sure you get no regrets. You go and give your very best there. We'll all sleep well at night. And they did. They were outstanding. Yeah,
that's every week for me. when did you first hear, was it not long after that the Celtic offer came in?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, believe it or not, it was the following day.
Really, because, right?
Well, I think during the playoff final, during the playoff final, Gordon had decided to resign and leave, and obviously, you know, you always know that clubs are keeping tabs on you anyway. So I knew that obviously that Dermot and Peter and I knew that they had a high opinion of me, and they knew I was doing well and such forth. So then the day after that, obviously I was approached.
And did you speak to them?
Yeah, I spoke to Dermot, to Peter. John Reid was the chairman at the time, and I've got to say, I went in there and I thought, that's it. I'm Celtic through and through. That'll never change. And Dermot, we would chat for about an hour, and Dermot came back and said, listen, Owen, I want to offer you the chance to be manager of Glasgow Celtic. And I said, yeah, I'll take it. I was like a little boy again. I mean, it was my team and everything else. And he says, great. Obviously, we need to, you know, as they do, speak to Burnley and see what happens from there. And and everything. And obviously there was going to be, we obviously had the celebration and everything else to go through, and so we'd said we'll leave that a couple of days and then obviously we'll take it from there. But obviously when you come away, and then what I had to do really was take the emotion out of the decision, because Glasgow Celtic, first and foremost, as a kid, you want to play for them. And then when you, obviously those days, and I came close to that on a couple of occasions as well, but when then you're a coach or manager, then of course that's the team you want, that's the team you love, that's the team you want to be involved with. But I was in the best league in the world, I was in the Premier League, I was going to be playing against your Chelsea, your Man United and everything else goes with it. I was at a really good club with good people as well, and I had to be, you know, fair with that as well. So ultimately when I came back, we had to go through all that. And I remember ringing Dermot on the Wednesday night, I think it was the Champions League final in Rome, and I rung Dermot, and I can't say I wasn't emotional, because I was. And I says, I never ever thought I'd utter these words, but I can't take the job. And he says, oh, why is that? I says, well, I says, I just, the league we're in, and the Premier League and everything else, and from the family point of view, my kids were obviously young at that age, and then you come back into the and we know sometimes what the environment can be in terms of kids at school and different things. And so, on balance, we made that decision, and that's where it was. And listen, it's my team, it'll always be my team. And there we go.
Do you regret turning it then?
I think at that time, listen, if the question is, would you have loved to be manager of Glasgow Celtic, then of course, that's everybody's dream. But at the time, obviously, it was the right decision for me and the family. And, you know, it's still my team. It's still, you know, every game, we kick every ball with them as well. And you see the job that Brendan's doing and Brendan's done and what he's doing. And it's brilliant to see.
Do you think if you never got promoted up to the Premier League that year, you would have took the job? Huh?
I don't know the answer to that. Had I got promoted to the Premier League, you might not have been offered the job. It's all relative. What I do know is it's a brilliant club, a brilliant people in Dermot, Peter Law, people I've got an awful lot of time for. And listen, it goes without saying, it's one of the best clubs in the world.
Okay, on to the Premier League with Burnley. How exciting was that going into playing against those top players and top teams?
It was, you know, exciting, absolutely. And it was going to be difficult, it was going to be challenging, because we had the smallest budget ever known to the Premier League. I mean, I signed
Fletch
from Hibs for £2.5 million, who was outstanding for me. But £2.5 million, you think, was an absolute bargain. But even Fletch came in, he was our highest paid player, I think £12,000 a week for the Premier League, which was absolutely nothing. But what we had, we kept continuity with the players. We added one or two, but I felt it was important that those players that earned the right to be there got the chance to show they could be Premier League players. And they were terrific for me, I've got to say. I mean, I had 10 games at home in the Premier League, obviously before we left to go to Bolton in January. We'd won 5, we drew 4, and we only lost one game at home. That's with Burnley in the Premier League. You know, we'd turned...
Beat Man United, didn't you?
We did. That was the first home game of the season. And Sir Alex Fergie, Sir Alex has been brilliant with me with the Chris Eagle signing. And he watched our team and he kept on sending texts during the year. And then after the playoff final, he said, listen, Owen, he's absolutely sensational. He's deserving. You've got a good side there, Bill. He says, but just remember when I come visiting, I want a nice couple of bottles of red wine. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, right, okay, great, bump, bump. He says, I'll send you my wine magazine, make sure you get... Anyway, it wasn't scripted, but anyway. So as you do, our first home game of the season was against Manchester United, the champions, coming to Turf Moor. So it was the second game of the season. We went to Stoke on Saturday, we lost 2-0 to two set plays, incidentally. Mm-hmm. A long throw for Rodri Lamp in the corner. But the good thing about that game was we were terrific in the game, so I knew they could handle the Premier League as much as we lost 2-0. So it was a lot of lessons to be learned from, but it gave us a lot of confidence. Anyway, coming into this game, you think, well, okay, if we get anything off top, it's great. But that morning, I'd say to Dan Bentley, who's still there, Dan's a great lad, I said, listen, Dan, you need to go into the town and get me those two bottles of red wine for Sir Alex and his staff when they come. I need to make sure they're looked after. They'll be great for me. So away we went. It was like £500-600, whatever it was. But anyway, he'd been really good to me, so it was well worth it. So anyway, but when he came back with two bottles of red wine, bear in mind, I'm teetotal, I don't drink. I actually went to put the two bottles of red wine in the fridge. And only he was there. I said, what are you doing, you madman? I says, what's wrong? He says, you don't put that in there. It's got to breathe at room temperature. I said, right, okay. And he had the wine notes and all that.
Imagine Ferguson's face if you took
that. Well, so I started reading through these wine notes and I think, I wonder if I could carry this off. But anyway, I decided to bin them, thinking I wouldn't. But as it happens, you're right, we went out, we won the game 1-0. Robbie Blake, who was sensational, scored a wonder volley. And we won the game, we were terrific in the game. And Sir Alex's staff came in, Sir Alex is brilliant, came in, they were there for about an hour and a half chatting away. It must have been good because they drank both bottles of red wine, so it must have been good stuff. But there you go, they'd been in the fridge, had they not been there to tell me.
Leaving for Bolton, That must have been a tough one. Obviously, Bolton, you played for it. Was that the big pull?
Well, I remember saying to Brendan when I came in, I said, listen, Burnley gave me the opportunity. And I says, there's only two clubs that will probably ever turn my head if I'm doing well. Glasgow Celtic, who's is my team. I says, in Bolton, because I played for them. And what happened was, in the November, we started drawing one or two games I felt we should have won. And then in December, and I said to Brendan and Barry Kilby was the chairman, I said, listen, I need a couple of experienced players in January. And the club, because obviously when they got promoted, a lot of the money went back to the directors' loans, because these directors, to be fair to them, had put a lot of their own money into the club. So it was only natural they got their loans back, their money back. So that didn't leave a lot of room for manoeuvre in respect of where Burnley were. So I said, but anyway, come January, I'll need these couple of players. I can't guarantee you we'll stay up, but as best I can, if I get these two Premier League players with a bit of know-how, we'll stay in the league.
Who were they, do you know?
No, I had players in mind.
Oh, right, okay.
It wasn't the individual player, it's what the cost was going to be.
Right.
I still had a couple of young ones lined up, you know, Jack Wiltshire coming from, who eventually came to Bolton, but I had one or two. And anyway, Brendan, to be fair to him, was his company. He was going through a difficult time in that, so we were really dealing with the chairman. And they said, well, we don't really have any scope for bringing players in on. And so, anyway, I carried on. So it got to that point that maybe I thought I was being taken for granted, I don't know, but Bolton changed manager. Gary Megson had left, and then obviously they came with the approach to myself. Now, I knew the club, I knew what was there, and I knew the squad they had. I mean, they were second bottom of the league and one of the favourites for relegation. So again, I went into the meeting and I asked, could I get these two players? Because had I got them, then I would have stayed at Burnley, but I never got them. And then, so I'm not saying my hand was forced, because ultimately I'm the one that made the decision.
Yeah.
So I did, and my disappointment was that when I left, there was the kind of, you know, as they do, you've got to protect your club. I get all that. They kind of turned it that I'd left and was kind of made to look probably in a bad light, when nothing could have been further from the truth. But anyway, it is what it is. My dad always said, if you don't get anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I kept my own counsel and let it go for there. But what I did, as you know, I went into Bolton and kept Bolton up with 9 points. Mm-hmm. Never spent any money. I brought Jack Wiltshire in loan. I got Stuart Holden in the Bosman. I got Vladimir Weiss in on loan from Manchester City. Never spent a penny. And kept them up with 9 points to spare. Unfortunately, what the sad thing was, obviously, Burnley then went down. So, but that for me, that was the sad part, because I've got so much time for Burnley. We never say a bad word about them. I love them a bit, and still keep in touch with a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. And it's great to see, obviously, with the job that Sean's done and how they're doing.
What was more appealing about the Bolton job than the Celtic job 6 months earlier? Was it the Premier League?
I think because then I was in the Premier League, I realised what it was all about. And the other thing from with Bolton, I knew Bolton had some really good players there. I think we felt that we could go in and prove them, keep them up. I didn't know at the time when I went in that they already owed over £100 million to the owner, Eddie Dave. But anyway, that was a side issue. Ultimately, you have to deal with it as you go. But and that's what happened. And really, the Premier League is the best league in the world. You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you've got big clubs. As we say, Glasgow Celtic is one of them. But you've got your Barcelona's, Real Madrid, good individual teams. But the actual league itself, the Premier League, and as it was at the time, the Barclays Premier League, it was it's intense, it's quality, and it's a fantastic level of football.
Were you surprised at the furore? There's a big word for you, of the reaction of the Burnley fans when you went to Bolton, because for the outside, the rivalry doesn't look that big.
Yeah.
Sort of Scottish people, but
I think part of it was that they, and I totally understand this, that I think Burnley felt if I was going to leave, it was going to be for a huge club in the Premier League. Because of how well we've done it. And I've got to say, the Burnley fans, as much I'm back there a couple of times to play against them, and they didn't miss me, I've got to say. But while I was there, listen, I can't thank them enough for what, how they got behind me, the song. I mean, every game they used to chant for the manager, which was unheard of. Burnley's a special club. I mean, for the size of the town, you don't see a Liverpool top nor a Man United. They're Burnley through and through. And you see that, you see it now with Sean, you know, how they've tapped into that. And it's... it's an amazing club, and a club I've got so much time for. But because they've been so kind to me, I totally understand that when you went, they could turn on you like that. I understand that. I don't agree with it, but I certainly understood.
That's what, is that the frustrating as a manager? Fans have got quite short memories, because obviously you did such a great job there, and then
Yeah, well, again, I think, you know, ultimately they felt that you were there and you're part of their fabric and everything else. So they probably felt that I'd let them down in that respect. So I can kind of understand that a bit. But anybody I meet and chat through them, they certainly understand. I think when I have, they're always thankful for that. I mean, the quality of football we played, the way we played, the cup runs we had. I mean, we should have been in the final of the League Cup that year, Tottenham. We played home and away. And they beat us 4-1 at White Hart Lane. I've got to say, we're 1-0 up at half time. Gareth Bale played in the game at left back. Chris Eagles absolutely tormented them. 1-0 up at half time. Spurs had 5 attempts in the second half. I think scored 4. An own goal, a deflection. You couldn't make it up. But when we came back to Turf Moor, talking about team talks and everything like that, I'd said to the boys before the game, we'll win this game tonight. Guaranteed. I knew we'd beat Tottenham at home. I said, I can't tell you we'll beat them 3 or 4-0, but we'll win the game. So anyway, we went out and we actually won the game 3-0. So any other competition in world football, you're in the final. But in the League Cup in England, away goals don't count until after extra time. And with 90 seconds left extra time, Pavlyuchenko, that was the two strikers, Pavlyuchenko and Defoe, Pavlyuchenko hit one and big Brian Jensen, the beast, got a hand to it and it just went in off the post. Anyway, they went to the final that year. But we then went to play West Brom and big Tony was in charge, Tony Mowbray, who were a Premier League team on the Saturday in the FA Cup. And we won 1-0 down early, but we were brilliant in the game. And I remember saying to Sandy, 92nd minute, I says, tell you what, it doesn't matter how this finishes. The boys have been brilliant. They're ready now for the league to pick themselves up, because I thought there might have been a bit of reaction to losing the semi-final. But we actually scored the 9th, Martin Parson forced the draw one each. And then we brought West Brom back to Turf Moor and we beat them 2-0, 3-0 and won the game comfortably and knocked them out. Another Premier League team. But what that lesson told me was the boys were ready to go in this challenge to get promoted, which they did.
Great job you done. On to Bolton. When you first took over, did you think it was possible to survive? Obviously, you were not at the
job. Yeah, we took the job because we felt we'd keep them up. And
do you know what the players that you had?
Yeah, I mean, Gary Cahill, and players, you'll know this as well, because obviously, but when you look at players from the outside, you think he's a good player, but not until you get to work with them on a daily basis do you understand how good they are or how good they're not. And Gary Cahill was the feet of a centre-forward. He was quick, he did about everything. Kevin Davis, the skipper, was up the top. You're seeing the goals. I mean, Bolton had some good players. Johan Elmander, even Klasnić, they had some wonderful players.
And you were still playing, give us a Klasnić story, I love it. Well, you were still playing reserve.
Yeah, well, we went to Open Cliftonville's Park in Belfast, invited over, and I wanted to take a decent team tour to get a good crowd, and because you always try and help people in football, as people have done with me. And I was playing in the game with Ivan Klasnić, Croatian. I mean, Croatian striker, outstanding player. And Sandy, obviously assistant manager, I said to Sandy, I'll play 60 minutes and then take me off and you'll put somebody on, bump, bump, bump. And so anyway, I'm playing about 60 minutes and Sandy shouts, right, Coyley, off. And I hadn't scored yet and we're winning. I says, hold on a minute, Sandy, give me a couple of minutes. He says, you're coming off. So anyway,
he's a couple of minutes.
Yeah, so as that happened, Klasnić rolled the ball to the edge of the box. And as any good striker will tell you, when you take the ball away from the goals, the keeper's automatically going to come with you. As they can move forward, I always love reverse chipping them. And don't get me wrong, I was 40 or whatever I was, 45 at the time, 44. So I've took it away, reverse chipped it, top corner, and Klasnić looked at me and said, I don't believe that. You are a lucky shot. I says, Ivan, that's just quality. I says, anyway, Sandy, that's me. and managed to walk off. So it was brilliant. And listen, the playing days here are the best days of your life. When you get a chance to play, it's absolutely brilliant.
Great. I wanted to ask you about Wilshere. Obviously, what was the connection? You said you were going to take him to Burnley and then you eventually got him to Bolton.
Well, I'd seen Jack for a couple of years playing all through the Arsenal. And I spoke to him. I had a really good relationship with Arsene Wenger, because when I came into Burnley, we got drawn against Arsenal in the FA Cup at Burnley. And we beat them, they beat us 2-0, sorry, but we played really well. And Arsenal went in the press and said, Burnley belied their championship status. They'd pace, power, their technique, the football the manager wants to play. It was lovely to watch. And then in the following October, we played them in the quarter-final of the Carling Cup before we played Spurs. And we beat them 2-0 at Turf Moor. Big Kevin McDonald scored both goals. Big Kevin was outstanding. And Arsenal went into the press after that and said, oh, they're the poorest team we've played this year. But that was Arsenal because we'd beat them. But I had a really good relationship with him, and I'd said to him, oh, listen, I really like the kid. He says, yeah. He says, I think he's ready to play. He says, but I've got Fabregas, I've got Danielson, I can't really get him in. I said, well, give him to me. He'll play every week, I'll play him. And he went, yeah. I says, you see the football we play? And he went, yeah, yeah. He says, so when I'm in Bolton, I phoned him. He says, yeah, he can come. So Jack Wilshere came in, first training session, and you'll know this. And there's a myth in England that the boys from the south are a wee bit softer than the lads from the north. So Jack's come up for London, first training session, we're playing a possession, and Jack gets the ball, and Kevin Davis, the captain, who was the strongest man in the world, Kevin Davis just comes for the side, and boom, splatters him. Jack just spinning through the air and falls on the ground. And Kevin Davies just stood over him and said, "You all right, Jack?" So Jack just looked up and said, "Yeah, fine, skipper, thanks." So I let him go, just got on me. And a couple of minutes later, Kevin Davies gets the ball, goes to turn out, as you do, a striker. As he turns out, Jack Wiltshire arrives. Bang. Sends Kevin Davies spinning. Yeah, he falls and Jack looks over him. Says, "You all right, skipper?" And to be fair to Kevin Davies, Kevin Davies says, "That'll do for me, Jack."
Brilliant.
He just wanted to, and the thing about Jack, out with all his ability, Jack's as hard as nails. Jack's a tough little, he's a tough little player. And I knew then, he's ready. Went straight in the team, played every game for us. It was
great football player.
Yeah, we were, I mean, we were, in terms of young players and identifying them, we always had a good eye for young players. Daniel Sturridge and boys like, and we utilised that loan system because at the time when we went into Bolton, we'd owed so much money, we were having to cut back. The budget for the wages had to be cut, so we're cutting every year. But that following year, you don't know if you're aware of this or not, we actually had Bolton in the top six for three quarters of that season. We went to the semi-final of the FA Cup, and then we lost Stuart Holden, who I'd signed for nothing from Houston Dynamo, on a Bosman.
Centre midfielder, wasn't
it? Oh, sensational he was. Player, he'd have been a top Premier League midfielder all his days. He got caught against Manchester United and a tackle with Johnny Evans, and he never ever came back from it. And I couldn't replace him. We didn't have like for like. And he was a huge part of our team. And but as I say, for where we were, the budget we were, I say to Bolton that top six for, you know, three quarters of the season, whatever it was, it kind of petered out towards the end of that. But it was sensational.
Brilliant. The third season in charge, you got relegated by a point.
Yeah.
How frustrating.
Well, it was, because obviously in the back of that, as I say, we'd been cutting back. Mm-hmm. But then in the January, it was against my wishes, I've got to say, but we sold Gary Cahill. He was out of contract in the summer, so he was going to leave for nothing. And they end up taking $6 or $7 million from Chelsea for him, which was a way under his value. I mean, the year before, we'd agreed $17.5 million plus Nedda Manoa from Manchester City. So that deal was worth about $22.5 million. And it fell through because Gary Cook, who was the chief executive at the time, and Roberto Mancini, I think they had a little disagreement. So anyway, the transfer never got concluded, so Gary stayed with us. And to be honest, Bolton would have been better keeping Gary for that money, because you'd obviously stayed up all day with Gary Cahill in your team. And just a true story with him, because people look at these footballers and they think this and that. Gary Cahill, the deal was agreed for Gary Cahill on the Monday night. And I phoned him, I said, "Gary," it dragged on for 2 weeks, but eventually get agreed on the Monday night. I said, "Gary, that's everything sorted for you. Go to Chelsea. I wish you all the best." He says, "No, Gaffer." He says, "I'll see you tomorrow night." We were playing Everton on the Tuesday night at Goodison. I said, "But they've agreed the deal." I said, and I'm just thinking of the kid now, I'm thinking of Gary. He says, "God forbid something happens." He says, "No, Gaffer, I'll be there to help the boys. And after the game then, I'm joining Chelsea." So
you played in the game?
Well, not only did he play, you might have remembered the game, because it was the night that big Adam Bogdan, who's at Hibs, I think we scored against him, Tim Howard.
Oh, okay. Huh?
He kicked the ball and there was a horrible wind. The ball spun over Adam's head, he came to get it. And we found ourselves 1-0 down. I remember turning to Sandy, because when things are going against you, think, how much bad luck can you get? But then, David and Gogg equalised, Gary Cahill scored the winner.
Brilliant.
We beat them 2-1. The reason I tell that story is because I think it's easy to, you know, players get rubbish for this and that. But that was a player that wanted to be there for his teammates. It was easy for him to say, "See you later, I'm away to Chelsea, I'm going to go and win a league and a Champions League," which he did. But no, I'm going to stay, I'm going to help the players and just sums the boy up.
You left Bolton early in the Championship season.
Yeah, I think as you do, we end up with four cruciate ligament injuries. Young Marcus Alonso broke his foot twice. I signed Marcus.
Alonso's at Chelsea, yeah.
I signed Marcus for €1 million euros from Real Madrid. I'd also agreed to sign Rodrigo Moreno for €1 million euros. And what happened was Rodrigo then, as we had agreed the deal, Rodrigo got used as a make weight, and Di Maria was going from Benfica to Real Madrid. And Rodrigo got used as that to go to Real Madrid. They said he was all worth like €5 million euros in the deal. So then what I did is I actually went to Benfica and got, I couldn't buy him because obviously, but I got Rodrigo on loan for a year. Right. So Rodrigo and Marcus both played for me in the Premier League. Marcus broke his foot twice that year. The injuries were horrendous. And obviously then Fabrice, St Patrick's Day in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup at White Hart Lane. Fabrice obviously collapsed in the pitch. And God willing, he made an unbelievable recovery and just a gem of a lad. So we'd loads of stuff to cope with. Even through all that, we got to the last day of the season, and if we'd won at Stoke, we'd stay up. And the game ended up 2-2. We've got to see Chris Foyle's a referee, the biggest nightmare you'll ever see in your life. Won the first goal, Jonathan Walters, it was like a throwback to the 50s, mm-hmm. when the centre forward bundles a goalkeeper over the line, which he did, with Adam was in the goals. And then the second one, Peter Crouch, took a bad touch and then knocked it and just fell over for a bit. Anyway, we lost 2-2 in that, and we drew 2-2 and lost out on that day, which was horrible to take. And then as you do, when obviously you move into the next season, again, we had to, you do one or two things, I think that most teams do, either cut back, or you spend a lot of money to get back up, which likes in Newcastle did, West Ham, and were successful in doing it. But because Bolton owed money, they had to keep cutting back and cutting back. Mm-hmm. So we obviously, we never did start we wanted in terms of being in about the top six. We were just, I think we were at mid-table or whatever. And then we decided, Phil's, he's not here now, God rest him, my chairman, Phil Gart, said he was outstanding for me. But obviously Eddie, the owner, we came to an agreement that we'd part ways.
See your experiences in the Premier League. Do you think you had a team that had financial backing and secure, you'd have done really well in the Premier League?
I've got no doubts about it. I mean, everywhere we were, we punched above our weight. And that probably is part of the trait of growing up in Scotland. You've had to work hard with what you have and treat things well. But yeah, absolutely. I love my time. Really good, a lot of good people we met. But you're right, if you've got that backing, that funding, of course, you can achieve great things.
Is it frustrating that people forget what a good job you've done at these places?
Well, football's football. I mean, it's the same as I was a player. I mean, I played at all different levels as a player. You work your way up and then maybe you drop down and you come again. That's what football does. But what you do is you pick yourself up and you go again. And when the next opportunity comes about, as it will do, then you go and you make the very best of that. But at the end of the day, you know what you've done, you know what you're capable of, and that speaks for itself.
So looking to get back in it?
If it's the right thing. I've been offered a couple of things, home and abroad. I've just not felt it's been what would suit for me. But if it comes and I know it's the right thing, it doesn't have to be, as I said before, I just always like working with, in a situation, you know, you've got players that are going to give their all for and you can add a little bit of quality to help. And working with good people always helps.
Rowan, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Loved it.
Cheers.
Loved
same.
It. Absolute
thank
pleasure,
you.
Mate.
Cheers.